Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 356. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to the second oldest city, the oldest capital city, and one of the three biggest art markets in the United States, as we go to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. If my voice holds out, having lost it in Japan, I have three news stories for you before we get into today's interview. The first one, you may not know Katy Price. I certainly didn't, but apparently she's a reality star in the UK. She had some complaints about her honeymoon at Sandals, and I kind of loved Sandals' reaction. Sandals offered her a full refund for her honeymoon if she never books with them again. Meanwhile, a fan of the film Princess Bride was hassled while trying to get through airport security because of her t-shirt, which said, "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die." Apparently, the security people were not as big a fan of the movie. And then Disney is promising to transform the way the guests experience Disney theme parks because the guests will be wearing a new RFID bracelet that will let Disney know where they are. Like being on a cruise, these bracelets will function as your room key, park ticket, fast pass, and credit card, and will allow you to sign up for 3 fast pass appointments before you even get to the park. If you're wearing one of these, don't be surprised if some of the characters in the rides respond to you by name and may even know if it's your birthday. For links to all 3 of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Billy Frank, who's coming to us from Santa Fe Travelers. Billy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. I'm glad to be here.
And first of all, Billy, I'm going to guess is a nickname.
No, Billy is
Your name given on my birth Interesting. Certificate. Named after Billy the Kid?
Well, I almost was Wilhelmina. I have a grandfather named William and a grandmother whose name was Dora. And a lot of people, most people don't know this, I am Billy Dora.
All right. And you've come to talk to about Santa Fe, New Mexico, where you are currently living or living outside of Santa Fe, as I understand. What would you recommend that people come and do in Santa Fe?
Well, Santa Fe is a wonderful melting pot. We have 3 very distinct cultures here, and the cultures tie in with the historical period. So you have the Pueblo people who were the first settlers here, and the Spaniards showed up in the late 1500s, so you have the Spanish period. And then for a brief time, we belonged to Mexico, and then it went to territorial U.S., and that was the Anglo period. And those are the primary cultures here. And it's probably one of the only cities in the U.S. that has that cultural mix. And that cultural mix really plays into what you want to see when you come to Santa Fe. And when I was a concierge, the 2 things I was asked the most when people came here was, can I go see a Pueblo, and about Georgia O'Keeffe? And so those are 2 out of the 3 settlement groups. And yes, you can see a Pueblo, and you can visit Georgia O'Keeffe's home, but only between March and November, because it closes, because it's not properly heated for the winter, I think. I'm not exactly sure, but they're not open November through March.
And I'm not going to assume that people know either what a Pueblo is or who Georgia O'Keeffe is.
The Native American people, or the original people in this area, were settlers who were agricultural. They weren't nomadic, like some of the tribal peoples of the U.S. and the Southwest. Mm-hmm. They built villages and they farmed and they stayed in one place. And the villages were called pueblos by the Spanish. Pueblo is the Spanish word for town. And we have archaeological pueblos that are no longer lived in. And then we have current day pueblos where people live and just carry on lives like any normal American village. If you came 50 years ago, it would have been a different environment. They mostly work on the pueblo and it was a more active village. Today, most people go out to go to work in the community and they come back. And Georgia O'Keeffe is probably the best known woman artist in the U.S., if not the world. And she discovered New Mexico around 1930. She was a guest of Mabel Dodge Lujan, who was up in Taos, who brought in people like D.H. Lawrence and Ansel Adams and other very well-known people to her home in Taos. And Georgia O'Keeffe came and she fell in love with New Mexico. And she moved to Abiquiú, which is northwest of Santa Fe. And she lived there until about 1984, when due to old age and ill health, she had to move into Santa Fe.
A couple things there. Pueblo, for instance, I have pictured in my head when you talk about a Pueblo Indian village or that square adobe buildings with flat roofs.
Yes and no. To a large extent, the ones that you see that are in pictures are the ones from Taos Pueblo mm-hmm. and things like Mesa Verde, which is in Colorado, where they had the two stories or three stories and they had ladders.
Right.
And that is the historical Pueblo. And Taos has been like that for 1,000 years and the old buildings are still there. The current day buildings are also adobe or stuccoed. So they look like adobe and they're generally one story and not as romantic looking as the old Pueblos with the ladders.
Okay.
And they have some cinder block buildings too.
Not as much need these days to build a house that you can pull up the ladder and keep the invaders out. So
that is correct.
Okay. That's good.
And that is why they were built that way. For one reason was the ladders were there to get to the second story. And the other reason was defensive.
Okay. And then you mentioned Georgia O'Keeffe and the connection with artists and New Mexico. And I've always found that interesting how much of an influence either New Mexico has on artists or artists have on New Mexico, and I'm not sure which it is.
I think it's a combination. Santa Fe, which has about 70,000 people, is either the second or third largest market in the U.S. It used to be behind New York and L.A., but now I hear it bandied around that we're number two. When you think of the millions of people who live in those cities, it's a pretty impressive figure. And art keeps Santa Fe going to a large extent. And artists were drawn here. One of the reasons is we have incredible light here. And we get over 360 sunny days a year. So for an artist, it's very inspirational. But it's also a very unusual color palette. It's a very brown palette with some reds thrown in. There's very little green out here. I don't realize how much I miss green until I go east or west. It's a very brown palette with some green on the landscape. We're high desert, which is different than a desert like the Sahara.
Right.
Or the Gobi, where you just see sand. We actually have things growing in our sand. And it's more stabilized.
Well, and I don't think people realize that you're also at some altitude. And I don't remember how high Santa Fe is.
7,000 feet.
And that obviously makes a difference as well. So when you say you have 260 days a year with sunshine, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are all warm, sunny days, or all warm days at least.
Over 300 days a year. And I don't know exactly how many, but it's more than 265. And I think if the sun peaks out, they count it as a sunny day.
Right.
But we do have seasons. It's very cold here today. We have snow on the ground. People confuse us with Phoenix. We are not Phoenix. We, in the summer, get warm days. This summer was extraordinarily hot for Santa Fe. And at night, it will go down into the 50s and 60s, which really makes a difference. And it's a dry heat, so it's not as hot as somewhere that has humidity. Our humidity hovers around 15% sometimes. Mm. And in the winter, when it's cold, you could go out and it's 30 degrees and you don't need a hat and you don't need gloves unless the wind is blowing. At least I don't. And I grew up in New York, where if I go back there, 50 degrees, I've got gloves on and I've got boots on and I've got a hat on, I'm cold. Mm-hmm. So it makes a huge difference in something. It has to do a little bit with the dryness and something to do with the thinner air. And I can't tell you exactly what, because it's a little more scientific than I get.
And then given that, when would you recommend is the ideal time to come to Santa Fe?
My favorite time, and Santa Fe, let me just say this, Santa Fe is wonderful all year round. Every time of the year offers something. And we do have a ski slope for people in the winter. So a lot of people come up, especially from Texas, to ski. My favorite times are early spring, around late April and October. The weather's beautiful. In the spring, you have the start of flowers and trees budding, and that makes it very beautiful. In the fall, we don't have a lot of colors, but we have aspens, and aspens turn yellow, and they look beautiful. And it's just the climate is beautiful, the light's beautiful, and that is my favorite time in Santa Fe, I think.
Excellent. Now, you started to say what people should see in Santa Fe, and then we got a little distracted, so let's go back to that.
I'm famous for getting distracted. I kind of work in stream of consciousness, like, whoops, there's a flea. Okay, what people should see in town in Santa Fe. The thing that I love is the history here. We are the second oldest city in the U.S., and we are the oldest capital city in the U.S. The oldest city is St. Augustine by a hiccup. So you have some very, very old buildings here. We have the oldest house in the U.S., and we have the oldest church in the U.S. We have the oldest government building that has been in continuous operation. It was the Palace of the Governors, and it was built around 1610 or so. It hasn't always been a government building, but it belongs to the state of New Mexico now. And actually, it may have always been a government building. And Lew Wallace, who wrote Ben-Hur, actually wrote it in that building. He was the governor of New Mexico at the time he wrote it. So you have the history. And then you have the Native American culture. And there's a little bit of it in the city. At the Palace of the Governors, which I just mentioned, there's something called a portal, which is a porch overhang anywhere else. And under the portal at the Palace of the Governor every day, they have a program where Native American artisans can sell their art. And they sit on the ground on blankets, and they lay out their wares, and people can come by and buy directly from the artist. And it's a very strict program, and you know that everything sold there is authentic. So that is one way to connect with the Native American culture here. And then there are a lot of galleries that specialize in Native American art. And we have two Native American art museums. We have the Museum of Indian Art and Culture, which is a little bit out of town on Museum Hill. And we have a contemporary Native art museum, which is in the old post office that dates from the WPA era in the 1930s. And then there's a new museum, which is a museum dedicated to Native American women artists. And it opened this year, and it was opened by an artist whose name is Margaret Bradshaw. And she has a grandmother who's a very, very well-known Native American artist. And her name was Pablita Velarde. And her mother, Helen Hardin, there's three generations of Native American artists. So you had Pablita Velarde, who was the first significant woman artist in New Mexico. Her daughter, Helen Hardin, who was a very well-known abstract artist in the early 60s, and she died in 1984, and she was a very well-known Native American artist. And then Margaret Bagshaw picked up the family torch, so to speak, and she is now a well-known contemporary Native American artist. And they just opened the Museum of Indian Women in the Arts.
And when you say artists, are we talking about painters?
We're talking about the arts. It could be painters. I suspect at some point they will get into pottery, because pottery is a very important tradition with the Native American women in New Mexico. And the most well-known potter in the state was a woman named Maria Martinez, and her descendants are still making pottery. She was from the San Ildefonso Pueblo, which is northwest of Santa Fe, and she began doing pottery somewhere around the 1920s, and she's a very iconic potter. And everybody who knows anything about Native American pottery knows that name. And her work is found, There's a Native American gallery, a pottery gallery called Andrea Fisher Gallery, and they have some of her old pots and contemporary potters, and it's probably the best pottery collection on sale in Santa Fe.
Okay. And where should we go next?
Next is probably the art tradition in town. And we have museums. We have the New Mexico Museum of Art. We have, again, up on Museum Hill, the International Museum of Folk Art, which probably has the best collection of folk art in the world. And then we have over 200 galleries in Santa Fe. Hmm. It's an art town. And the largest concentration is up on Canyon Road, which is one of the oldest streets in town. It's always called Historic Canyon Road. And it's a very, very beautiful, narrow street with wonderful adobe buildings and some of the few examples of non-adobe in town. They had in the early part of the 20th century, there was a big push to make everything look adobe. And a lot of those wonderful bungalows that you see in Colorado and California, those turn of the century arts and crafts style bungalows, got adobified. And on Canyon Road, you find a couple of buildings that are still brick, which to me is very refreshing. And it's just a wonderful street. It goes uphill and you just walk up the hill and there are galleries and shops and a few restaurants. If you like art at all, that is one of the must-see spots in Santa Fe.
Okay.
And Santa Fe offers one photo opportunity after another. It's just a very, very photogenic city. So come with your camera in hand. And then you have the Spanish culture here. And you'll encounter that every day walking around town in Santa Fe. There are people whose families go back 400 years. They came with original land grants. And you can sort of tell there's a very unique accent, which you won't hear as a visitor, but you can hear when you live here. And then we have a very big Mexican population also. We also have a significant Salvadorian or Salvadoran, I don't know what the correct term is, population here. And so it's a real melting pot of cultures, as I said before. And to learn more about the Hispanic culture, there are two things I recommend. One is the Spanish Colonial Art Museum, which is, again, up on Museum Hill. And there is also a seasonal place called El Rancho de los Golondrinas, which means the Ranch of the Swallows.
Okay.
And it is a Spanish colonial hacienda. It was a fortified house, so it's built around a courtyard, and there are no or very few external windows. And they have a living history village there. They've brought in buildings from other places in New Mexico, and they have a lot of acres, and they've set up buildings. So they have a blacksmith, and they have a mill, and they have an old schoolhouse, and they have a morada. Moradas are little churches, and they go back to a tradition in New Mexico of the penitentes.
Okay.
The penitentes were people who did self-flagellation.
The penitent.
They tried to replicate the suffering of Christ, and they used to flail themselves with nails. They used to tie themselves to crosses at Easter, and they would do a pilgrimage to a church that's in a place called Chimayo. But the moradas were these little teeny churches where the penitente brotherhood would meet. And before they had modern transportation, there were not a lot of churches in New Mexico. So the penitentes met a lot of the religious needs of the smaller communities. And they're very controversial. They don't do the self-penance anymore, or at least they're not supposed to. And they are still here, but they have a much quieter place in the community. So the moradas, some of them are still functioning, some aren't. And you'll find them in little towns up in the mountains. So they have a morada at Los Golondrinas. And it has a lot of the traditional things that you would have found in a Spanish colonial town prior to when it became a Mexican territory, and even after it became a Mexican territory, until the Americans arrived and opened the Santa Fe Trail, which was in the 1850s.
Okay.
And I forgot one of the Native American museums, the Wheelwright Museum up on Museum Hill is a small private museum, and they have very small shows, but they have wonderful shows. So that's another piece of Native American culture in town.
Now, it seems like the other place that the culture and the melting pot has really been evident is in the food of New Mexico.
Yes, that is true. And you have two food cultures. You have the indigenous culture, and they had corn, squash, and there was a third crop, which is escaping me right now. We were just talking about this the other day. And chilies, which is our big food that we're really known for, came up with the Spaniards, and I think it originated in South America.
I think the chilies were actually part of the Mexican native Indian culture. As I recall, when I was in Oaxaca, chilies were one of their five staples that they had going back 2,500 years or so as well.
Yes, but I think they wended their way there from South America.
Could be.
Steve
could be.
Actually knows a lot about chilies because he's really the food person in this outfit. But at any rate, they were not indigenous to New Mexico, but they caught on. And so our cuisine is very chili based. You'll hear the question in a restaurant,
red or green. Yeah.
And that means you want red chili or green chili. Or if you want to sound like you actually belong here and you want to try both, say Christmas, and you get a little red and a little green. Now, here's the warning. New Mexico chili is very hot. They actually say to you, mild, medium, or hot. Don't believe them. When we didn't live here, I went into a restaurant in Albuquerque and I ordered mild. I took one bite and ordered sour cream, and I still couldn't eat the food. It was the hottest thing I'd ever had in my life. So my suggestion is, if you're going into a Mexican restaurant and you want to have chili on the food, ask them to taste it before you get your food smothered in it, because they will not take food back because it's too hot. And some restaurants will even say that on the menu. And here's the other thing is, it depends on the chili. So sometimes it can be mild. This year we're getting a very hot crop of green chili, and it's really, really, really biting. And you don't know until you taste it. I've come a long way since I've lived here. I had such a wuss palate when I showed up. And now I can eat spicy food with the best of them. I might be choking, but I eat it. And it's wonderful. One of my favorite things is a breakfast burrito smothered in green chili, and it's like going to heaven. And the other things that, and actually Steve for New Year's Day is making pozole, which is a Mexican holiday dish. And pozole is like hominy, and they cook it in red chili, which is called caribe, which is C-A-R-I-B-E. Mm-hmm. And they use pork usually. So it gets soaked before you cook it. And that all the abuelas or the grandmothers made traditionally at the holiday time, more Christmas than New Year's, but they also eat it all year round, and a lot of the restaurants here serve it. So basically, and hominy is sort of, it's what would be hominy in the South is pozole here.
Okay.
And carne adobada is a very big New Mexican dish, and that is pork, usually braised red chili. Sometimes it's cooked differently. We had one south of Taos recently where they marinate the pork in the red chili overnight, and then they grill the pork and they put the red chili over it. It was incredible. It wasn't typical carne adobada, but it was one of the best I've ever tasted. It was unbelievable. And they have a vanilla pudding traditional dessert called natillas, N-A-T-I-L-L-A-S. And we have our state cookie is bizcochitos, which is kind of like a sugar cookie.
Okay.
And it's the official state cookie. It's not just the state cookie. It's the official state cookie. And there's a big to-do over whether you spell it with an S or a Z. That also shows up a lot around the holidays, but it's a very traditional thing. And the other food that's very traditional is a sopapilla. Sopapilla means little pillow. And these tortillas that they throw in oil and they puff up. And you can either eat them with your meal, or you save them for dessert and you put honey on them. And they are just delightful. And it's one of my favorite things about eating in a New Mexican restaurant is the sopapillas. and I love them stuffed and smothered. And they tend to do a lot of shredded beef rather than ground beef here traditionally. And I love shredded beef. So shredded beef, sopapilla smothered in green, just brings a smile to my face.
Any particular restaurants that you would recommend people try?
In town, The Shed is very, very famous and wonderful. They've been here over 40 years. The only thing about The Shed is, for some reason, traditionally they serve garlic bread. So they don't do sopapillas. But they have a sister restaurant called La Choza, C-H-O-Z-A, and they do sopapillas. They're in the Rail Yard District, which is a little west of the downtown area, which is known as the Historic Plaza area. Mm-hmm. And for breakfast and lunch, Tia Sofia's is very well known. That's where all the politicos go for a power breakfast in Santa Fe. And they've also been here a very long time. And the Plaza Cafe on the Plaza, which has just reopened after being shut 2 years because of a fire, has a mixture of New Mexican and Anglo food. They are the oldest restaurant in Santa Fe that's been continually operating as the same restaurant. And they were bought by a Greek family in the late 40s, and that family still runs it. And so you have a little Greek, a little American, a little Mexican. It's very touristy in some ways, but also a place where locals go, as is Tia Sofia. And supposedly, and there's a lot of controversy on this, the Frito pie was originated in Santa Fe at the old Woolworths, which is today called the Five and Dime. A Frito pie is a bag of Fritos that is cut open. They pour chili on it. They put cheese on it and lettuce and tomato and onions. Out of the bag, it's a different Frito pie. Restaurants will tend to serve it out of the bag. But the real traditional Frito pie is right in that little teeny bag of Fritos.
Oh, that's funny. I've never seen it in the bag. Okay.
Well, the original, official, authentic one is the bag. Most restaurants don't do that anymore. They put the Fritos and the chili and the cheese and lettuce and tomato. But it's a trip to go by the Five and Dime, which is extraordinarily touristy, and have one of these.
Excellent. Any other particular recommendations of things to see in Santa Fe before I start going into my usual questions?
I think I've covered a lot of it. I mean, there's so much. Just, it's a walking city. Mm-hmm. Walk around, you'll discover things.
And you've mentioned a couple of different neighborhoods. You mentioned the railroad neighborhood. You mentioned the historic downtown, and then Museum Hill. Those are the three that have kind of stuck out for me from what you've said so far.
And Canyon Road.
And Canyon Road. Okay. Excellent.
Which is part of the historic East Side. And another neighborhood I'm going to throw in, because I think it's a must, is the Barrio Analco, which is the oldest neighborhood in Santa Fe, and it is across the street from the oldest house and the oldest church. They're part of that neighborhood.
Okay.
And it's on an old street called Delgado Street. And that is something that I think everybody who comes to Santa Fe should see that. And the other thing, okay, I missed two things that are really, really traditional to see in Santa Fe. One is the Loreto Chapel, which is known for its spiral staircase, which is supposed to be architecturally impossible. And so that is a very, very popular destination spot. It's been on TV shows that go for really unusual things and impossible things. And it's the Cathedral Basilica de St. Francis de Assisi, or the Cathedral Basilica of St. Francis of Assisi, was built in 1858 by Bishop Lamy, is what he's called here. The French would be Lamy, I believe. My French isn't very good. He is the archbishop who Willa Cather wrote about in her very, very well-known classic novel, Death Comes for the Archbishop. And he built this cathedral, and it is really a magnificent church. They've redone it in the last couple of years, and the art on the walls is very New Mexican. The Catholic Church meets New Mexico in a lot of the churches here. They're very different than churches in other places. And it's just a very, very beautiful cathedral. There is an apse where they have La Conquistadora, and she was, well, an articulated virgin. Her arms and her limbs move, and they have a society of women who are dedicated to her, and they dress her for every holiday. She's in a different outfit. And when they had the Pueblo Revolt, of 1680, when the Native American Pueblo people drove the Spanish out for a period of 12 years. She was grabbed and taken to safety, and she was brought back when the Spaniards came back. And so at fiesta time, which is in early September, she has a whole parade around town, and she's very, very important in the religion in this town. And this is a very Catholic city. Mm-hmm. It was founded on Catholicism. The Catholicism has remained strong to this day. And so on Christmas Day, everything shuts up tighter than a drum in this town, except for some restaurants. I mean, you can't go to a museum. You can't go to a shop. Nothing is open. On Sundays, a lot of the New Mexican traditional family businesses close. So a lot of the New Mexican restaurants are closed on Sunday. It's probably more in the grip of Catholicism than any other city in the U.S. at this point.
Okay.
It really impinges on the culture and really affects it, but in a very interesting way.
And you said that leads me into the other question. We talked about the best time of year to come, but is there a particular day, a festival, for instance, that is particularly worth coming to New Mexico, worth coming to Santa Fe for?
We have three very special art markets in the summer. One is the folk art market, and that is in the first part of July. And people come from all over the world, and vendors come from all over the world. They have people from Africa, from Asia, from Europe, from Eastern Europe, from South America, from Mexico, from Central America. They all come to set up in this wonderful outdoor market. And collectors and stores and just people interested in folk art come for this 2.5-day market. And then that's followed by Spanish Market. And Spanish Market started in the early part of the 20th century. And there's two components. One is the traditional Spanish market, and that features what they call the Spanish colonial arts. And the Spanish colonial arts are arts that came with the original settlers. And there's a whole list of probably 10 of them. One is Santero, which makes religious carvings, and retablos, which are religious paintings. They have culture embroidery. They have straw work. They make crosses out of straw. There's weaving, there's tin work, there's leather work. And you have to adhere to certain standards to be allowed into traditional Spanish market. And you have to come from a family that is from New Mexico, or I believe Southern Colorado, and has to date back to the, you have to be able to trace back to the Spanish culture. And then they have contemporary Spanish market, and that is where people of Spanish descent who are not following the traditions of Spanish colonial art can set up and sell their work. And this is all around the plaza area. So the whole plaza gets shut to traffic. And it's just amazing. And people get out there at 8 o'clock in the morning and they come to shop. They come to look. It's a big festival. And then the biggest market in town is at the end of August. And that is the Indian market. And that also dates to the early part of the 20th century. And they have Native American artists from all over the country. And they also started letting in First Nation artists from Canada 2 years ago. Hmm. And it's a juried show. It's the finest Native American show in the world. And again, it attracts people from all over. Now, with the economy in a little bit of a spin since 2008, it has affected the markets, but they're still pretty vital. And the artists at Indian Market this summer said they really had a good market. And so those are very special times to come. Indian Market is the most crowded time of the year in Santa Fe. Hundreds of thousands of people show up. Hmm. And it means that the hotels are all booked, the restaurants are all booked, and it's the most expensive time to come to Santa Fe.
Interesting.
But it's a very, very interesting time. So those are the special festival times.
I get the impression, and tell me if I'm wrong here, that by some sense you consider yourselves a Santa Fe resident or Santa Fean. What is a Santa Fe resident? Santa Fean?
Well, Santa Fean would be what you call.
Okay. And in the other sense, you're not, but maybe your grandchildren will be, that there is this depth of culture there that you couldn't, for instance, participate in some of the markets that you talked about. But when, for you, did you know that you had adapted? What was the moment that you went, I'm no longer from New York, I'm from Santa Fe?
Well, if you ask the people who have been here hundreds of years, I'm not from Santa Fe.
Right.
I mean, I am an outsider, as are the other Anglos. I fell in love with Santa Fe in 1986, before we lived here. We were on a trip, and we went to the Puye Cliffs, which is the ancestral home of the Santa Clara Pueblo, which is northwest of Santa Fe. And I was sitting up on the top, on the mesa, on top of these wonderful cliff dwellings that they had lived in up until the Spaniards came. And, well, actually, that's not true. They lived in the cliff dwellings earlier, and then they had Pueblo on top of the mesa when the Spaniards came. And I was sitting up there with my son. In those days, you were allowed to drive up to the top. You can't now. And Steve had gone for the car. We had climbed up and gone into the caves, which you no longer can do either. And we had just had a wonderful time going up to the top of this. And Steve went for the car, and our son was 12 at the time, and he and I are sitting there, and we're listening to these rattlesnakes rattle. And I'm just sitting there, and I felt like I'd come home. And I knew I wanted to be here.
You know, there was a moment in that story, which I can't quite get over. No, it was the rattlesnakes rattling made you feel like home.
I don't think it was the rattlesnakes rattling. They were there. It was part of the ambiance. I don't particularly like rattlesnakes. And I think they know that in the 9 years that we've lived here, I've seen one rattlesnake.
Okay.
I've heard about lots of them. I've only seen one. But it was something about the energy of sitting up there and connecting with this culture that just was a very special thing for me. There's two places on earth that my soul feels at home. One is here, and the other is in the west of Ireland, and don't ask me why. But they're the two places that I've been to that I felt like I've come home. And Steve and I looked at each other when we got back from this vacation, and we said, let's move to the Southwest. And we wanted to move to Santa Fe. We had a 12-year-old who was very well adjusted. And I realized that you don't move an adolescent to an alien culture. And this was a very different culture, and it would have been a very hard one for him to fit into. So we said, okay, when he's out of high school, we'll move. Hmm. When he was out of high school, I was doing something I loved, and I didn't want to go anywhere. So one day when Ethan was in college, Steve walked in from his job and said, I'm done, let's move. And so we were all set to move right away. And there was a little bit of a housing crisis where we lived in the Hudson Valley. IBM had just downsized. And so it took us 18 months to sell the house. And instead of Santa Fe, we ended up in Fort Collins, Colorado, which was the 2-year plan. We were there 8 years. And then we decided we wanted to be down here. And through an amazing series of events, we got down here. And I feel very at home here. It just speaks to my soul. And I feel very at home in the Southwest. When we first moved to Colorado in 1996, we had to go back east for our son's graduation at Cornell. And I kept saying, I want to go home. And home was Colorado. It wasn't New York anymore. And I'd spent my whole life in New York until that point. And I still feel like this is my home. And it's just a very amazing feeling. So I might not be considered a Santa Fean, but I feel very at home here, and I love it.
What's one local you wish everybody coming there could meet? Let's say living.
That's a very tough question, because Santa Fe is a city of individualists, mm-hmm. and there are just tons of people that are amazing, and it's just a question of, if you come, can you meet them? Because they're not hanging out in the plaza mm-hmm. waiting for people to come up and say hi. Margaret Bagshaw, who I mentioned, is probably very accessible. She has a gallery called Golden Dawn Gallery, and she's not in there a lot. Her husband runs it, but she's probably more accessible than a lot of other people I've talked about. There's a wonderful Native American sculptor whose name is Roxanne Swensel. And she has a gallery north of Santa Fe in a town called Powaki, which is named for the Powaki Pueblo. And you might run into her gallery. People are in their studios creating, so it's very hard to go and say hi to an artist or meet one of our local characters. So that's a real tough question. They can beat me, Chris.
I've got four more questions for you. Before we get into those, any last things you could think that people should know before they come to Santa Fe?
That you really need to adjust to the altitude if you're not used to altitude. And that means drink lots of water. And we're very dry anyway, so you want to drink tons of water. Bring sunscreen. Bring a sense of humor. This is like being in a third world country. The pace is very slow. It is a mañana place. You go to the pueblos and people will say they have pueblo dances, which are wonderful. And they're held on specific dates throughout the year. And the dates are very set in stone there. The pueblos have feast days and they welcome outsiders for those. And they do pueblo dances on those days. And they also have just dance days on certain occasions. And a lot of them go with the Christian holiday. So Christmas is a big time for dances. And so people will say, what time do they start? Well, they start whenever they're ready. And that's how it works. And that's how a lot of being in Santa Fe works, is that you just have to be very patient and wait for things to happen.
Okay.
And if you come with kind of the New York vibe, which I have because I'm like a now person, I call it the coastal vibe, you have to leave it at home because it just doesn't work here. And the locals just do it on their particular time schedule and you're not going to rush them. And so it's just, it's very interesting and I'm still getting used to it.
So you're standing in the most beautiful spot in Santa Fe. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Santa Fe is so many beautiful spots, but we have absolutely incredible sunsets. So what I recommend is going up to the Cross of the Martyrs, which is on the east side of town, and going to the top of the hill and looking at the sunset. Okay. And it is absolutely beautiful.
Excellent. Last two questions. Finish this thought for me. You really know you're in Santa Fe when what?
You see Adobe every place you look.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Santa Fe in three words, what three words would you use?
Historical, cultural, and magical.
Excellent. Billy, where can people read more about or hear more about Santa Fe from you?
SantaFetravels.com. That is our blog, and we write a lot about Santa Fe and northern New Mexico. And that's something we didn't talk about really, but one of the things you want to do when you come here is do some day trips around the area. Visit an archaeological, historical pueblo. Visit Taos. Go hike in one of our numerous hiking spots. And the other thing is Steve Collins, my blogging partner, who does most of our photography and does some writing. He and I have a travel planning and tour business for people coming to Santa Fe. So we can plan your entire itinerary. We can take you on a tour. We can do whatever you need us to do for your visit. And that is called The Santa Fe Traveler. And that has its own website, thesantafetraveler.com.
Excellent. Billy, thanks so much for coming on the show. Our guest again has been Billy Frank. And thank you for sharing with us your obvious love for your adopted home of Santa Fe.
It was a pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
Normally at this time we do the news from the community, but since I have very little voice, I think we will skip that and just close the show. Feel free to email the show at host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on the show at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X or join the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And as always, thanks so much for listening.